Dogs make the best companions for humans. This podcast aims to help make humans better companions for their dogs. Welcome to the Beru Podcast, a modern lifestyle podcast for dogs and their people. I'm your host, Charlotte Bain. I've been caring for other people's dogs for more than 15 years. And while I've learned a lot in my career, I definitely don't know it all. So I've collected an ever-evolving roster of amazing dog people, and I learn new things from them all the time. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Beru Podcast today. Today, I am joined by Cassidy Jones. Cassidy is a PhD candidate in African American History and English at Yale University. She's also the content creator behind Ginger Snaps on Instagram, where in addition to posting really cute pictures of her dog Ginger, she discusses the intersection of race and animal welfare. We dive into the fraught relationship between African Americans and dogs in this country and the discrimination that still shows up today. We also discuss how we as pet parents and those that work in the pet industry can do our part to bring about change. So let's just jump into this chat. Is Ginger near you? Can I see your face?
Ginger.
Hi, Ginger. Hi, sweetie. Hi. Oh, she's big.
Yeah. 75 pounds.
Oh, my God. Well, mine's like 65. So, yeah.
I think that's what she's supposed to weigh.
Yeah. She's a mix, right?
Who knows?
Who knows? You haven't done like the DNA test? Yeah. Yeah. Good. My guy. Yeah. Mine's a mishmash of all sorts of good stuff. So
nice.
Yeah. I would love it if you could just introduce yourself a little bit and tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about Ginger and your journey with her.
Sure. So my name is Cassidy Jones. I am a fifth year PhD candidate in African American Studies and English at Yale. And I am also the content creator behind the Instagram account Ginger Snaps, which focuses on my journey as a first-time dog mom, long-time dog lover, but this is the first time I've had my own. And also the intersections of racism and anti-Blackness as they show up in the pet world, including pet Instagram. But my focus is mainly historical because at heart, I am a researcher and an educator, which is why I don't cuss people out on Instagram, which is what,
right.
which is what some folks expect from me. Yeah.
Yeah. So what inspired you to get Ginger and how you've had her like a year or so?
2 years.
A year and a half. 2 years.
Okay. Her gotcha day is next month, about a month from today. Yeah, I'm excited. Ginger was my ex-boyfriend's idea, honestly. We both wanted a dog, but it was his idea to get her when we did get her. And she kind of came right on time because I was wrapping up my qualifying exams in my program, and she was like a reward for doing all of that work all summer. And then when we split up, that was about a year ago, I took Ginger. And so now we live in Connecticut. We used to live in Philly. That's where we adopted her. But
okay.
Now we're back in my hometown.
And what, that's similar to my story when I got my guy. Oh. That's funny. We had like not been together for quite some time, but we were still living together. Mm. And it was like the last, we were celebrating his birthday and we came across Chance. And, he really pushed me to get him. And it was like, literally the dog changed my entire course of my life. Yeah.
I feel you on that. Yeah.
So that you were saying that was like your first time ever having a dog. You didn't have dogs growing
up. No, I tried convincing people to let me have a dog for my entire childhood. I was just at my grandparents' house. They live in North Carolina. And my grandma has this pamphlet that I made. Like I made a persuasive flyer trying to get to let me adopt a dog in their house. I didn't live there full time, so it would be their dog for most of the year. Yeah. But I tried. I was trying really hard.
How old were you when you, like 9 or something?
Yeah, that was either the end of elementary school or the beginning of middle school.
Yeah. Cute. Mm-hmm. What have you, like as a first time dog mom, I know it's, it can be a bit of a struggle, especially if you've never, I mean, the rewards outweigh the the hard times. Absolutely. But what are some of the challenges and some of the joys that you found in these first 2 years?
She's so expensive.
Oh my God, I know.
I could not have imagined how much money I would be spending on this dog. And Ginger has allergies, which I've been talking a little about on our page. We just found out what she's allergic to 2 years into the game.
Did you do an allergy test?
Yeah, we did a blood test.
We have really hard allergies over here too. Which blood test did you do? The NutriScan or like the?
It was IDEX.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've ever done that. Okay. Yeah. I'll look into that.
She went to a dermatologist and everyone in my family laughs at me. But yes, I brought my dog to a veterinary dermatologist and the derm said the process of doing the skin test would be a lot for her very young body. And so if we could get some answers just from the blood test, she would want to start there.
Yeah. And you did. So is it helping a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's a little less itchy right now. She's just scratching in the mornings for the most part, which I think has to do with what she's sleeping on, her bed. So I'm doing research on beds to swap
it's so
out.
Hard.
But yeah.
It can be like a combo of stuff. And then it's just like, but anyway, well, I hope you figure it out. Good luck to Ginger on that one.
Thanks.
We've been struggling for about 14 years with that. My guy's almost 15. So, but you know, he's powered through. He's a trooper. We've gone through different foods, different everything. So what do you think is the biggest joy of having Ginger?
I think having someone, okay, this is about to get very deep. But having someone...
You're going to make me cry already.
Right. I'm tearing up just thinking about it. Having someone I can love unconditionally, give love to, nurture without being worried about making a mistake, like giving love to the wrong person. I think the dating world right now is very hard.
Yeah. especially after the pandemic.
Right. The pandemic made it harder. And everyone's kind of trying to protect themselves and their feelings. And you get a lot of people who are dating so reserved. Mm-hmm. And with Ginger, I get to be my full self and I can be as doting as I want. And she's not going to make me look foolish for doing that. So I'm just very grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the biggest beauties of dogs. They love you unconditionally and they allow you to love. You learn that you can love unconditionally.
We can't both be teary-eyed like 3 minutes into the podcast.
I mean, that's what he did for me. He really healed me and did all sorts of good stuff. So,
she's been carrying me through the last year. She's the real MVP for that one.
I bet. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Goodness.
Okay. So, I'm beginning to take it a little bit, with your relationship with Ginger and kind of the journey that you guys went on, what inspired you to want to start creating awareness around the disparity in the resources between like the African-American community and as well as the discrimination that's kind of prevalent in animal welfare? Because I know that's a lot of what you do on your Instagram, and you've started doing some really amazing work outside of Instagram.
Thank you.
To spread awareness. Yeah.
I'm trying.
I see a TED talk in your future.
I think I do so many of these engagements that people don't realize this, but I'm actually terrified of talking.
Oh, interesting.
In my real life, I'm super quiet. My closest friends barely hear my voice.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. It's scary.
It is.
It's super scary. I get super nervous between each of these. I've never put myself out there like this before.
And they live on the internet and anyone can hear them at any time. It's a lot. So I think it wasn't my experiences that prompted me to start sharing the things I was noticing. I think it was the reverse where I was doing research. My dissertation is on 19th century African-American eco-poetics. And one of my chapters is on poetic representations of Black folks and their animals in the animal world. So when it started there, I just started picking up all of these really fascinating things that I wasn't seeing discussed. And I started sharing those little facts and I got a lot of good feedback from that. And that's when I started making the connections between what I was reading and what I was experiencing trying to raise Ginger. And it just took off from there.
Yeah. For people who may not understand or really be aware of the history, which is a privilege in itself, mm-hmm. right? To not be aware of the history or not have to think about it. I think we should probably dive a little bit into the relationships between dogs and African Americans throughout history, mm-hmm. And the role they played. If you wouldn't mind, like, touching on that and yeah. kind of going way back to set the stage for what we're seeing today in ways that we didn't realize. Yeah.
So 19th century is my bread and butter.
Yeah.
But the story goes back before that. African Americans were kind of set up to be against dogs from the beginning, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Dogs were set up to be against us. So it yeah. starts with the use of what were known as Negro dogs that were specifically mm-hmm. trained to hunt down Black people who escaped enslavement, because that was considered like stealing, basically. These people were considered someone's property. And so folks made a living off of training dogs to go collect another person's white people's property. And it just happened to be Black human lives. Mm-hmm. And so just from the beginning, it was so adversarial, intentionally so. White supremacy made it so that Black folks were not supposed to like dogs. Dogs were not supposed to like Black folks in the United States. Even though this practice comes from the West Indies. So that's, I guess, from 1619 up to the early and mid 20th century, even late 19th century, late 19th century, you still get advertisements saying that so-and-so has a special breed dog or a specially trained dog that has never failed to maim a Black person that it was targeting. Mm-hmm. These are just running in the newspapers. It's just so ingrained in culture that dogs and Black folks don't mix. But then you also have examples of folks who were enslaved and were given the privilege of having a dog, because some people who enslaved folks did not allow their human chattel, I'm doing air quotes, to have dogs. One, because mm-hmm. the logic was property should not own property. And two, because white folks were weaponizing dogs in that way, they were afraid of dogs being weaponized against them in return. So some folks were legally barred from having dogs. Some Black folks were legally barred from having dogs at a county level, a town level. There were people writing letters and showing up to town halls trying to advocate for no Black person to have a dog, because the argument was Black people's dogs were eating up all the sheep. But obviously it wasn't just dogs that belonged to Black people that were doing that. However, the anti-dog campaigners knew that they were not going to get support for telling white people what to do. So they limited their campaigns to saying how dangerous it is for Black people to have dogs. And that was a political strategy that was just entrenched in racism. And it worked for them. Okay. But there are examples of enslaved folks who did have dogs and who loved them very much. You see them come up in slave narratives, mm-hmm. people talking about how fond they were of their dogs, how hard it was for them to leave their dogs behind if they did choose to escape. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nurturing there, because dogs could help supplement income. They, yeah. If your dog helped you hunt, you could sell the extra meat, you could sell extra furs. And they also provided sustenance. Folks who were enslaved were not getting a very large allotment of food. So being yeah. able to take a dog out into the woods and feed yourself and your family, that was really revolutionary for some people. Okay, that's the end of enslavement. There we go. Even though these legislations, these laws that mm-hmm. people were trying to pass, that's happening after the Emancipation Proclamation even. The last one I saw was 1874, when slavery had supposedly been over for years at that point, but mm-hmm. nope. Okay. So what 20th century. Sorry, go ahead.
I remember you saying that I remember when I watched your webinar, there was a tax just for yeah. African Americans. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to own a dog, they'd had to pay a fine essentially mm-hmm. to own one, which automatically, makes it harder to own a dog, right? Yeah.
So. Yeah. If you are already facing discrimination, already not being paid what you deserve to be paid, your little bit of money, you're probably not going to want to spend that on just not even on the dog itself, but paying it to the state to be allowed to have your dog. Yeah. That's just really prohibitive.
Yeah.
And then the only white people that had to pay that tax were the ones that owned Black people.
So they had to pay the tax on...
They had to pay the tax on the dogs owned by the people they owned. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So jumping forward
to 20th century. You see the legacy of Negro dogs continue with dogs being used by police forces to control crowds, especially during the civil rights movement. There are a lot of iconic images of protesters in the streets and dogs being chased or dogs chasing them, biting them, fire hoses being used on them. So the legacy continues of Black folks and their freedoms being against dogs, dogs being used against Black folks' freedom, which obviously is going to lead to the numbers that you see today in terms of the demographics of dog owners. There are significantly less Black dog owners, fewer dog owners in the Black communities than white homes. But
do we have a percentage for that? I don't.
It's 23.6 or 7%.
I thought it was in the 20s. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whereas the average or the percentage for white families is, I believe, 57%. Mm-hmm. So over half and less than a quarter. There's a very big difference. But you don't have as many Black folks passing on their fond memories of dogs. Instead, you're getting traumatic stories being passed on, and people do not want dogs in their homes.
Yeah.
Because they associate them with this negative thing.
Fear. There's a lot of fear, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Valid
Rightly
fear.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the other thing that's happening in the 20th century is more Black folks are getting involved with pit bull breeding and fighting, again, as a way to supplement income and protect themselves in really poor neighborhoods where there is an increase in violence and criminal activity. So the late 20th century is when you see pit bulls get really established as a Black and brown person's dog. And that's also when you see the big push for breed-specific legislation, which...
Because pit bulls didn't used to be.
It was a white dog. It was a white American dog specifically.
Yeah.
Pit bulls used to be the mascot.
I remember my mom saying, when I was growing up, we weren't taught to fear pit bulls. We were taught to fear German shepherds. Mm-hmm. And that was like the 50s and 60s. And I'm sure it's because what she saw visually of, aggressive German shepherds and policing and stuff. She's like, yeah, pit bulls were like, and pit bull mixes were like... all around.
Family dogs, American dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So BSL. Yeah. So we started seeing a little bit more discrimination against pit bulls because they were in the hands of Black and brown people. So we associated them with violence and all the things that we think about, all the preconceived ideas that we have about Black and brown people.
And again, just like during enslavement, folks are afraid of particular dogs being in Black folks' hands because they're afraid of those dogs being weaponized the way dogs were weaponized against us.
Right.
Even though that has never happened. But
yeah, nope.
Just that paranoia. And breed-specific legislation, a lot of the language to me sounds exactly like the legislation I was reading from 1807 saying who can have what dog and where and when. It's essentially the same thing.
Do you want to talk about a little bit about that? About some of the things that you're seeing? Because I'm not 100% familiar with breed-specific legislation, even though I have a pit bull mix. But we were just super lucky with that. My landlord could care less about any dogs and all the dogs that I have in here. a little bit about how that regulates and how it affects, poor communities and Black and brown communities and all the things.
Okay. So on the surface, you've got people thinking that pit bulls and pit bull mixes are a public safety issue. And so banning them from a particular location, whether that be an apartment building or a whole county, is going to make people safer. But beneath that, you have the association of pit bulls with Black and brown folks. So if you're saying that pit bulls can't be in your town, the underlying message is that Black and Brown folks are not welcome to be there either.
Yeah.
White families who have more wealth in the United States, who have higher incomes in the United States, are able to get around that by being able to purchase property, which a lot of Black families cannot, or just simply moving to another place where there isn't that law. But if you're poor, you gotta abide by those rules. You can't just pack up and move. You can't just buy a house. You have to go by what your landlord says. So that's disproportionately affecting low-income Black and Brown communities, whereas middle-class white families can get around it as necessary.
Can we jump a little bit into some of the myths associated with pit bulls, since we're talking about pit bulls? I am going to have, there's two people I want to have on this show. One deals with, is from ASPCA, and she's one of the doctors and behaviorists that deal with like dog fighting. The other is Stand Up for Pits Foundation. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they really dive deep on dispelling all the myths surrounding pit bulls. So hope to have those on, let's touch on it because it does, you know, it help people view things a little bit differently, I think, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of lore around pit bulls. Most of it's negative. Saying that they have the highest bite force of any dog or dog breed, or that their jaws lock and that's why you can't pull them off of people when they're mauling people.
Yeah, just been scientifically disproven.
Right. The science says that is not the case, even though the statistics that you're going to see are going to show that pit bulls are the most likely to bite. Most dog bites are committed by pit bulls. There's way more research to suggest that, one, we don't know what a pit bull is.
Yeah.
We human beings are terrible at recognizing pit bulls, which is an umbrella term. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these dogs that fall under the umbrella, which again is going to skew the numbers. If you are comparing one breed Golden Retrievers against all of the breeds that get called pit bulls, mm-hmm. yeah, it's going to skew.
Yeah.
So that feeds into the myth, and that's how, people try to validate something that's incorrect. People think that science is objective, but just because you see a fact or figure does not mean the way that fact or figure was collected was in an unbiased way.
Right.
So just be careful about where you get your sources. Another myth that I hear a lot about pit bulls is that they were considered nanny dogs.
Yeah.
And while that would be nice, it's also not technically true.
And also don't ever leave any dog alone with your child.
Right. First and foremost, there is no dog that is qualified to watch your children. And secondly, not none of us, but the average American family isn't good enough at reading animal behavior.
Body
I
language.
Think.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
To make that call. You should just give them space. Give dogs and babies space. But there was a period of time in the United States where a lot of people would leave their family dog to protect their children at home, but that was not unique to pit bulls. And, the phrase nanny dog did not really come into play until the 1970s, long after pit bulls were considered the American family dog. So that was just kind of one journalist, I'm pretty sure it was a newspaper, kind of writing flair that just took off as this myth.
Right. But, right.
I think the best way to help pit bulls is to kind of change the universal attitude to make people consider the dog in front of them.
Yeah.
Dogs are individuals, and breed can tell you some things, but it can't tell you a lot of things about the dog that's sitting in front of you. So these generalizing myths like nanny dog or like locking jaws, neither one of them actually benefits pit bulls in the long run.
As I've said before on the show, your dog is a unique being on this planet, first and foremost, and then it's a dog, and then it's a breed. So do you want to, so moving forward, part of the awareness you're creating right now is really to get people to understand how, in addition to be the breed legislation and some of the policies that need to change in animal welfare and some of the things that you're seeing, I know you've touched on, adoption practices seem to be very complicated. Sometimes it's harder to adopt a dog than it is to, you know, buy a home in certain places. It gets very complicated. And the, some of the things that you think, you know, that you'd like to see change and things that show up in a broader form like that, but also in the day-to-day interactions that we have with pet parents or with, you know, checking our own biases on certain things and all.
I've talked a lot about adoption requirements, but some of these breeders' requirements are way worse. They're way worse. People are so extreme.
Really?
And I get we love our pets. We want the best for them, but we cannot keep saying that the best is a white middle-class family. Sure. That's not a coincidence. It's a pattern and it's intentional. When we have these class-related requirements, like needing a fence on your property, if Black folks are one of the least likely groups to be able to own a home, not just because of wealth disparities, but because folks won't give Black people insurance in order to buy the house, redlining is historic. So even that requirement is going to skew toward white middle class families. And a lot of the requirements you'll see in terms of income, in terms of having an established relationship with a veterinarian. I don't know very many vets in the hood. I have to drive very far to go to my vet. So you're much less likely to have that established relationship if you don't live in one of those zip codes where you can find a vet, you can find a groomer, you can find anybody. So those kinds of things in adoption requirements, I think end up excluding low income and subsequently primarily Black and Brown folks from participating in adoption and rescue. I think there's also the fact that the free resources, which I'm starting to see more of, and I love, people are offering subsidies for spay and neuter, all sorts of educational things. But if those things are only being promoted in white circles, the Black and Brown folks are not going to learn. We're not going to learn. We're not going to have access to the low-cost vets. We're not going to have access to the dog food pantries that people need because we just don't know. And a lot of folks, I think a lot of rescues aren't, not rescues, but a lot of people in the pet industry aren't extending.
I think rescues also. I think there's, you know.
They're a part of it. Yeah, for sure. I just don't want to pin it all on rescues. Yeah, I think if the outreach isn't happening, if you're not promoting the free training sessions that you have or the low-cost training session that you have in low-income communities, then it's just going to be the same people taking advantage of these resources and the same people who get to have a dog.
Right. Right. I know that there are some good, like the Humane Society has Humane Pro, which is like an offshoot. I think that they launched in like 2020, which is helps to get, these are just a few of the things that I know. I mean, obviously there needs to be many, many more, but I think they're just starting to really understand the need because people are going to get animals regardless of whether they can afford them or not, right? People want that canine companionship and cats too, but this is a dog podcast. All the cats, a little bit less maintenance. Although I don't know, I don't have a cat, but I'm allergic. But yeah, people are going to, you know, they want that companionship and you deserve that. So there are little steps, right? But as far as like training and stuff, I think that's the last of the things that people think about, which I don't see a lot of representation as far as like, to be perfectly frank, I don't know any African-American trainers, dog trainers. I have a handful of veterinarians that I know, but I don't know any trainers. So representation matters,
right? Feel free
to
look at the Black directory that I have linked in my profile.
Great. I would love to. Yeah, great. I will. And that's another thing. You can shout out to your directory because that's really a place that people can reference. Right?
Absolutely. Please go to the link in my bio at gingers_naps, like Ginger Snaps the cookie, but my dog's name is Ginger and she naps a lot.
Is that what that's from?
Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. When we first got her, all she did was sleep.
Yeah. How old was she? Was she a baby?
4 months.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do. Yeah. They got to rest up all that growing she did.
Yeah. My grandpa was concerned though.
Oh, really?
No, that's every time he called, she was
like, what's wrong with that dog?
Right. He was worried. Anyways, if you go to the link in my bio, I have a bunch of great resources in there. One of them is a reading list, which is pretty new, which hyperlinks pretty much every text I've ever talked about on Ginger's Naps. So you can do the reading and the educating yourself. But the other two things, the main things that I'm most proud of are my Black Pet People directory, which is something I started pretty early on. I just kind of wanted to find other Black pet parents on Instagram and show them some love. And
yeah,
I wanted us to be able to find each other and support each other. And I made it public in a Google sheet. And now folks are using it to like
support,
buy from Black pet businesses and giving people opportunities. And so it's grown into this really amazing thing. And then the other is it's the one for people of the global majority, which I think is what's now replacing POC.
And I remember you brought that up in your webinar, and I love that term. I don't know
Me
how you
too. I like it much better.
I do too. And because it does something to my system when you say it, you know, people of the global majority, it changes a whole feeling, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait, right. For those people who don't, you know, who don't get it, you know,
right.
it changes the emotion. It kind of changes emotion when I say that, you know, so.
I agree. It also makes me feel part of something really big. Minority makes me feel part of something very small. But
that's a better way PGM to say it. Makes,
yeah. And POC sounds like colored people, and I don't like it.
People of the global majority.
Yes, there's a broader directory now that includes, there's Black folks in there, there are Asian folks in there, there's Latinx folks in there. A lot of people, anyone can use it. If you don't identify as a white person, you can add yourself to that directory right now. There's a form, you put yourself on it, you do not have to wait for me to update it. And you can promote yourself and describe yourself and what you do in your own terms. If everyone else can see the results from that Google form and use it once again to patronize certain businesses, to follow other people who look like you, follow people whose experiences you really care about, open up your worldview a little more, because pet Instagram would make you believe that the whole pet world is very white. It's just white, but it's not.
Yeah.
There are so many of us.
Yeah. So I think that's the biggest thing that we can do right now is to support businesses and support trainers and support, you know, all the things.
Yes.
So we can create more representation in the mainstream media, right? Okay.
And it's not just about pulling folks in. This is a mistake that I see some rescues make. They'll hire or attract more Black volunteers, but then once those volunteers get there, they experience a whole host of microaggressions because none of the work has actually been done to be anti-racist. Folks just feel like they hire the right person, they've checked off the box, but there's a lot of unlearning that needs to happen first.
Right. Do you want to touch on some of those things, or it's just those things that come up in day-to-day life?
Yeah, I'm talking mostly about biases from what I hear. I don't volunteer in a shelter. And when I do volunteer, it's usually on the back end, but like content creation, I'll help with that. But for the folks in the building, they hear the things that people say about folks that need to rehome pets, about folks that are coming to adopt, but may not fit all of your requirements. They can hear how you're talking about Black and Brown people.
Got it.
In terms of adopting. And that puts them in a very uncomfortable position. Either they have to do the extra work of educating you, which could put them at risk. They could lose their jobs or not being able to volunteer anymore, or they have to swallow it and just be uncomfortable in their work environment. And that's also not a great way to foster representation in the animal industry. Folks are going to leave if you don't take care of them once they get there. And I think primarily folks need to take the brunt of it. The work of education upon themselves. There are so many free resources now. There's so many free resources. If you wanted to learn more that don't involve asking for more labor from another Black person you don't know.
Yeah.
So take advantage of those first before you try to make your volunteer who thought they were just going to be walking dogs, also the DEI expert of the whole shelter.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of work to do, huh?
There's some work to do. Yeah. But the conversations are happening more and more now.
They are.
And I love to see that. I think part of the problem was you can't fix a problem you can't see. And a lot more people are seeing the problem now.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything else that you want to add?
About anything?
About anything. I think we've covered a lot.
Big takeaway that I always have is that if you love animals, non-human animals, and you want the best for pets, you have to take care of people.
Yeah.
You have to give people the resources to take better care of their pets if you want a better world for pets. So instead of judging homeless folks who want dog companionship, what resources right. can you give to that person right. to make sure that person and that dog are taken care of? Like,
I mean, if you look at the shelter situation right now, I don't know how it is in Connecticut, but in LA, in some of the major cities, yeah. it is like four dogs to a kennel wow. right now, because people have in record numbers, they've never seen it this bad before, return their dogs. Mm. And it really comes down to resources. Mm-hmm. It comes down to not being able to move into a place that allows the kind of dog that they mm-hmm. have. It comes down to not being able to afford training and all the things. So yeah, I mean, it filters down 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Cassidy. This was great.
Thanks for having me. A lot of fun. I'm glad we ended on a smiley note, because we started in tears.
We really did. I mean, the love for our dogs is so great, you know. It's real. It really is. I created a whole business around it, you know. I didn't want to miss a moment of him. And so
yeah, I feel that.
Thanks so much for listening, you guys, to this episode of the Beru Podcast. Please follow Cassidy on Instagram at gingers_naps and check out all the great resources and the valuable information that she posts. And don't forget to support. Let's chat next week.